Warning, the host of this podcast has a penchant for the pontification of puns and an altruistically alienating affection for alliteration. If you suffer weak constitution or get annoyed easily, you may want to seek prior medical advice. Or avoid this particularly perplexing podcast, as the host is unbalanced as a washer full of shoes.
Salutations, my slumberless stoners. Here I am again, the Chronic Insomnia Podcast, your docent of dope, Jack Pot, here with Keith Curlin, good friend of mine in the medical industry. So, Keith, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hey, good to talk to you, Jack. Good to be here. I'm Keith. I'm a just finished my second year pharmacy student at the University of Florida. I'm an intern working at a local retail pharmacy, and I'm the mental health chair for my chapter of SNAPHA, the Student National Pharmaceutical Association.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good thing it's not SNAFU. That would just be dangerous.
That would be, yeah, unfortunate.
Yeah.
What would you like to know?
So what is your current take on the mental health system, like how they handle it? You know, the number of cases, does it help more than it hurts? You know, like, are there just your general overall, you know, opinion of the mental health on the professional side, like how you see everything going, you know, now?
Yeah. Well, part of the reason, probably more than part, a lot of the reason that I got into the medical field to begin with was because I thought it was all messed up and that we needed to like come in and change it from the inside. But once I got here, I'm like, there are so many resources for patients. Mm-hmm. There's so much that is available. And the biggest barrier to getting people the help that they need is that they don't know that they can, or they think that if they do seek help, that it'll be, that they will be, how do I say it? That I don't know. It's the stigma that's
like
attached.
They'll be labeled something negative that'll follow, you know.
They'll be labeled by other people, or they'll be labeled by themselves. They see it as a failure. If I can't get through this by myself, if I look for help, then I am a failure. And that's
so it's not necessarily like the system itself that's going bad. It's the disconnect between mm-hmm. the system and the patients. Like there's not a whole lot of, you know, advertising or, you know, forward momentum as far as, you know, getting the word out there.
There's that. And that's not to say that there aren't super huge issues in the system as far as like who has access and how much stuff costs and right. how much care you can get before they start charging you crazy amounts of money.
Right.
But the barrier to the first time the person seeks care is the hurdle isn't as high as I thought it was before I started.
It's good to, you know, to realize that things aren't as messed up as you thought they were in the first place. It kind of makes everything a little easier.
Yeah.
So how about as you know, especially, you know, Florida, I know that there's a much higher, higher demographic of both mental health and, you know, just health in general, patients between the age and different things like that. So how does that stack up? Do you know, like anywhere else in the world, have you talked to anybody else like in the country or, you know, like, do we have a better grasp of the system or just kind of, you know, subpar, the same, you know, on the same page with everybody else?
Well, Florida is behind on a lot of things, not just like straight up healthcare, but education. Like,
right.
Because we're such a laissez-faire. Well, I mean, this is my opinion.
Yeah,
because we're such a laissez-faire kind of a state where we don't have a lot of regulation. We don't have a lot of systems in place that that keep things from going off the rails. They do tend to go off the rails here. Right. And we have a high geriatric population. We have a high veteran population. And because of those two factors, there are lots of retirees, lots of older people. And again, like dementia and Alzheimer, those are mental health issues as well.
Right.
So we have, the potential for a lot of mental health patients in our state, maybe higher than other places.
Have you ever done any work with the VA? Do you guys, sometimes get visiting doctors? Do you have a lot of crossover where you're at? Cause especially we have a high veteran population and we're all nuts.
Yep. well, we're all nuts. That's
true.
Some of us, I would say to any patient is that it's not just you, we're all here. And listen, we're dealing with a pandemic where we've got the biggest civil rights movement in American history happening right now there. If you're not responding with some level of stress and anxiety, then you're not paying attention.
Right. So, yeah. If you're not a little, pulling a little bit of your hair out, then there's something wrong.
But what was the question again?
A lot of crossover with the VA. Do you work with?
Yeah. My career coach works at the VA for Viz 8, Area 8, which is the whole Southeast.
Right.
I've gotten an opportunity to shadow her a few times, and she is, for next summer, my big project is I'm going to be shadowing the psychiatric pharmacy manager at the Orlando VA. That's going to be really good. I'll be able to answer more of your questions after that too.
We'll always take you back. You're looking more psychopharmacology, things like that.
Yeah. I got into it for adolescent care. When I was a teenager, the old lady who swallowed the fly. They were giving me meds for ADD, and then they were giving me meds for anxiety, then for depression, and then all three at once, and then adding and subtracting. And it was bad. Based on my experience, I was like, I'm going to make this better for people who are kids who are dealing with this. But then I got here and I saw so many more people are vets and old people. Right. And that's how I got, as you get more exposure to other perspectives, you see that not only the differences, but the similarities.
Right.
There are inciting incidents a lot of times that were preventable that set people down a path to, treatment that was not the best idea, right. or the first thing that you try doesn't go right, and you say screw everything.
Get frustrated. It's a lot of trial and error with a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as the cannabis industry, I know that Florida's not necessarily young, but backwards and stunted. But what's your take on all of that as far as, the industry itself, how, you think it should be medical, recreational, how that's flowing. And then, just as far as cannabis as an alternative treatment for, mental health and things like that.
Yeah. I wonder how popular this opinion is going to be, but I think that the medical, not just in Florida, but across the country, the medical situation is not where it needs to be at all. You have this burgeoning industry, this economy that's growing, that's awesome. I did a presentation on this in my managed care class, and I was like, listen, we have what's going on right now medicinally in the industry. That's what recreation should be.
Yeah.
Right. There's no reason why legalization shouldn't be federal and recreational across the board.
Have you seen how it's medical in the other states, or just is Florida your only reference?
Actually, I have more reference in other states, states like Colorado and California, and
so Florida is completely backwards the way.
Oh, we totally are.
Here. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but even so, there's no absolute, because we don't have federal legislation. There's no standardization of ingredients.
Right.
So what we have are these boutique shops that pop up. A lot of them are run by pharmacists, which is good on a quality control kind of but the manufacturing and supply doesn't have the dosage standardization that we are capable of providing.
So are you more for the vertical integration side, where it should all kind of be, regulated the same by the same people in-house, or is it just kind of, across the board, even for co-ops and collectives, there still just needs to be some sort of standard, like SOP for, you know, for the logistics and the operational side.
So if you're a co-op or a collective, then the system that you have in place right now is great for recreational use. Okay. Even if you have a chemist or a medical professional in your organization, what you're doing right now is great for recreational. For medicinal, if we can, instead of having a whole plant or a home distillation process there's got to be the same way that the FDA regulates the conversion of other natural products into pharmaceuticals. We've got to be able to standardize that process across the board. If we're gonna like write prescriptions for 70% CBD, 30% THC, or whatever it is, and there are more ingredients than that. This is what I'm learning.
Yeah.
Like there's so much more. If we could isolate just the CBD,
they're working on that now. I know, we just discovered, like, within this last year and a half, three new cannabinoids. So that puts us at like 132, 133, something like that.
Right.
And then, you know, like, we're just getting out of the whole Delta 9, Delta 8. They're just learning about that. You know, I think within the last year or so, they just realized that CBD doesn't necessarily have its own effect. It just slowly negates THC as opposed to, you know, having a thing of its own. So yeah, like we're always learning new stuff about it. Like there's always new, you know, new things popping up about the plant itself.
We're in this exciting frontier research phase, and a lot of my faculty members, I'm doing research not on cannabinoids, on the opioid addiction stuff. Mm-hmm. That's my wheelhouse right now. But not just new cannabinoids, new cannabinoid receptors in the body that we didn't know about. Mm-hmm. And as little as we still even understand serotonin receptors, we understand even less about cannabinoid receptors.
Right.
So we're slowly getting there. It's just a lot of old politicians who even the young ones wouldn't understand the science that they need to understand to say, just let this lie and split it into two. Let people, like, don't kill the economy you've created by changing all the rules. We have this amazing industry now that can still be an industry as recreation. And then we can grow prescription medicine by adding this new factor to it.
Right. So like you're more, keeping the separation between recreational and medical, just regulating the two of them differently, whereas a lot of people just kind of across the board, you know, do it all the same. So you're, and that makes sense.
It helps differentiate too, like in terms of not public opinion, in terms of the perception, like this feels like going to a kava bar or a coffee bar or going to like a, this is gourmet. Right. And then this is treating my medical condition. And if the two feel separate and look separate, it's going to be easier to
accept
for patients and the older generation of healthcare professionals to accept like how this is going to go.
So what's the SOP in your profession for, you know, can you guys be patients? Is that like a discretionary thing based on the hospital, or, you know, is it like, no, you guys can't do it at all?
Oh, there's no, if we're patients, we're patients. I've worked for a couple of local hospitals and they don't, there's not even a mandatory drug test anymore. But at the retail pharmacy where I work, it's a different story. We're a national chain, and without saying who they are, we're the biggest one, and we're pretty pretty slow to adopt any sort of.
Well, that's understandable. I mean, anything that's you know, a hot button subject, if you've got like a board of directors or anything like that, like a lot of times you're going to stay more on the fence than anything else.
That said, they are ready to have product on the shelf tomorrow. If you know that, you know, if it's, if there's money to be made, they're all
that's,
over it.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's what, like, I personally, and I've seen it a lot here, I'm a little worried about, is the fact that a lot of the pharmaceutical reps, the pharmaceutical companies and things like that, that, you know, lost so much in the other states when the industries, you know, came out, are here because there's a little buffer, the way that Governor Moby wrote the amendment. I hate that guy. So like there's a little more restriction as far as like the prescription, the card, the time, you know, the milligram dosage and stuff here, like everywhere else. Like I remember when I went to Washington, I walked in, I got my card and I was done. Like it was a year. Mm-hmm. I could get whatever I wanted. You know, I have 12 plants and stuff like that here. It's like the last couple of months I've had to wait because, you know, I've only got 2.5 ounces for every month or so, things like that. So it's just definitely, yeah.
It's like the DMV. It's like everything in Florida. You got to wait to get the card to get approved. You got to wait for the same with the unemployment situation.
There's so many old people you have here the card, that they don't
notice the waiting.
Yeah. So as far as like your general like opinion or you know hopes for both mental health, you know, and the cannabis industry as far as the medical side and stuff like that. Like what is your personal goals and then what you would like to see, you know, moving forward as far as the big picture?
Gosh, if we start with mental health, there is some danger for us to say like everybody should talk about their problems to each other all the time. However, that's kind of the direction that I'm headed. And what I would like to see is that if there is an issue there, especially like coming to me as a provider, if you're my patient, there should be no hesitation or fear to say, hey, I think I'm struggling with this, or I'm having these thoughts or feelings, and what do they mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I would like to build strong relationships with patients so that they feel comfortable coming to me with those sorts of problems. Depending on where I end up, I might be in a hospital as a psych pharmacist. I might end up in retail and like have my own store. But even if I'm in retail, I'm the person at the front. Like I'm the person that's most accessible to them in the health field. Like you don't need an appointment to come see me. Yeah. You don't need insurance to come talk to your pharmacist. So if there's somebody who you trust on the other side of that counter, that's what my goal is, not just for me, but for everybody who's coming through the classes with me. That's why I want to get all these people trained in suicide prevention. And we've got the trauma class coming up later this month for our students. We want when we graduate with this degree, I want my students around me to be able to recognize the signs and to help their patients be comfortable enough to talk about it with them. So if they need to take that next step and seek the help of a therapist or to ask their doctor for a prescription, they can do that with confidence.
So it's you want people to know that, you know, it doesn't have to be some big deal. They can come to, you know, you're a professional. You're the one that you know that deals with all of this. So that you just want everybody to know that, you know, you have access. They have access, no matter what your situation is, to someone who knows to at least be able to get them on, you know, the right path some way, or the help that they need, either financially or insurance or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think there are more and more people who feel the way I do in pharmacy, where we're like, well, we have all these qualifications. We don't always get to use them depending on what our jobs are, whatever our job description is at the time. But like it is incumbent on us as healthcare professionals to know, okay, I work in this town. What are all the ways people can get access to care in this town, and how can they do it in a way that they can afford? I was in a different student organization as their mental health person, and I switched over to SNAFA. SNAFA is all about serving the underserved. That's their mission statement. And that was way more in line with the way that I wanted to practice.
And then as far as like, is the industry moving forward, you know, hopes and dreams, like, do you think that maybe some on like a federal level hospitals should partner with, you know, with these consortiums and companies, the larger dispensaries, things like that? Or should it stay, you know, kind of the more business side, but still, you know, a medical?
This is the hard question, because what is so great about the industry is how grassroots and homegrown it is. And we don't want it to be subsumed by big pharma.
Right.
But the downside to that is that, like, it's the Wild West. And even though it's not as much as it was like 5-10 years ago,
yeah,
it's still really hard to get consistent and reliable product from no matter how good the place is.
Right.
Like, there's always there's always variability.
Depending on who's working, depending on the new level, you know, there's dozens of different variable conditions
I would like to see the outcome, like FDA regulation, mm-hmm. without like giant corporate. What I'm talking about seems impossible.
It's actually
highly regulated industry, right. with the mom and pop sensibility and business.
As long as, honestly, like there's a few different ways. The vertical integration is horrible. You know, it's the exact opposite of, you know, the whole thing that founded the movement and stuff like that. But it's good in the fact that, you know, it does attract a lot of money. It attracts, you know, between the investors and the corporations that want to get in on it. So I would think that some sort of like tax incentive or, you know, grant, because it's not like they're not making money. Both, even, you know, the locals, the mom and pop stuff, you know, I was talking about with another guest, you know, it's $70 billion a year globally, you know, like,
right,
Colorado made, you know, over almost $10 billion their first year. So it's not like it's not going to be able to support itself.
Oh,
just
it will.
A little more, you know, like, you know, partnership between, as opposed to, you know, regulation, just a kind of a, you know, an autonomy with, you know, with agreements governmentally.
Regulation in terms of quality control and safety.
Right.
That's where the wires get crossed, because depending on who you've got writing legislation or passing it, or who you have implementing the policy, mm-hmm. those grants will go to the right people, or they'll go to the giant corporations.
Right.
And the regulations will be used as a tool to elevate the product or to, you know, stamp out competition. So it's a tool that really depends on who's wielding it.
Right. And as far as the level of control, do you agree, the way it is now, it's all the way down like to a city and county level, or do you think that at a certain point it should, you know, pull back a little bit to a larger scale, like at least, you know, at a state level or above?
No, pull back a little bit. Like, right. It's the way it is now because it's new.
Right.
Once everybody kind of gets on the same page about what this is supposed to look like, then we can pull back a little bit. I think it's probably time.
Do you have any advice for anybody, you know, either in your profession that may be a little discouraged by the way things are going, or somebody, you know, who may need to seek mental help of some kind, or, you know, the resources, things like that, like anything that they can check up, not just, you know, necessarily in the state, but, you know, if there's anything that they can check and get a hold of, or, you know, just kind of, you know, words of advice for future doctors and pharmacists.
As far as future healthcare providers goes, here's my advice. You're going to get into school and you're going to have a lot of people filling your head with idealistic ideas about what it's going to be like when you get out. Don't buy into all of it. That's one thing. But at the same time, don't let the business of medicine like make you cynical. We're still humans, and we can work within these systems. Ignore the metrics, think about your patients, and you will be fine. You'll find ways to make those connections and help the people that you're trying to help.
Right.
At the same time, for patients, there is always help available all you have to do is open yourself up to it. Talk to your pharmacist or talk to the person that you feel comfortable with. Great website, psychologytoday.com. You can look on that website by your zip code, and it will list every mental health resource available in that city or municipality. And you can find individual doctors reviewed by patients in that place to try to find the person that's right for you in terms of cost or personality or their approach to therapy or practice. Mm-hmm. And then I can only speak to local Central Florida, the MHACF, Mental Health Association of Central Florida.org. MHACF.org is the place where I have found the most comprehensive and helpful resources for patients and for people like me who are looking for ways to go beyond their degree and help patients with mental illnesses in Central Florida.
All right. Well, Keith, it's been wonderful. It's great talking to you. I think that, you know, you're going to reach a lot of people. Like you definitely seem like you got in this for the right reasons, and I wish you all the best.
And I hope
hopefully
so.
We can get together more often because that's what I'm trying to do here is, you know, because especially in the military, and I've talked about it with a few people, there was this kind of subculture or just this unwritten law of, you know, you don't talk about it. You don't go to the doctor, you know, like you don't go, you know, like we call the shrink the wizard because he made you disappear, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, so, yeah
that's there's a lot of stuff like that. And so like, I want to do this because, you know, I don't care, you know, if I talk about it and people like I could give a shit less what people think. So I'm going to use that to get it out so that people do get help. So it's nice to, you know, to see, you know, somebody on the other side of, you know, the issues, the profession with the same overall, you know, goals and ideals. So it's good that, you know, it's good to see more eye to eye with people with, you know, different backgrounds and things like that. So yeah, definitely. And I've got another guest coming on soon, a doctor who specifically works with, you know, suicide prevention and stuff like that. So I'll get you guys together. Her name is Dr.
Lulu. Great.
We'll have the two websites. I'll make sure we put those on that episode. But yeah, it was great talking to you, Keith. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too. So thank you guys for tuning in, and hope you tune in next time for the Chronic Insomnia Podcast. Remember, no matter what life throws at you, this too shall puff, puff, pass.